Welcome back. I know, this week's late. We actually have moved production days from Wednesdays to Fridays, so this week's episode is a couple days late. It will be up. We're recording this on Friday. It'll be up tomorrow, right? It'll be ready. Yeah. And then we're going to be continuing this train to kind of get things posted on. We'll get back to Thursday releases, I promise. But in the meantime, bear with us. This week, I sit down with longtime friends of me and then the show, Ian, Barry, and Cruz Cruiser. We didn't actually go into that, but that's not his real name. But Cruz and Ian have been the host of Houston's first spirits-related podcast that I know of, but I'm going to give them credit for it, on iTunes called Smokin' and Toastin'. These guys have been getting together to talk cigars, craft beer, spirits for 2 years now, and they just hit their 100th episode, which I was lucky enough, honored to be on. So when you get a chance, go check out their Facebook page. That's Smokin' without the G and an apostrophe, and Toastin' without the G and the apostrophe. So Smokin' and Toastin', you get them on iTunes, Google Play. They're on all podcast platforms as well as Facebook. And yeah, we had a lot of fun. We kind of drank through the gamut of whiskey and just talked about a few things that I'm a little worried I may have to go back and remove so I don't upset brands, certain brands. But yeah, this week's episode was a lot of fun. We just had honest conversation with three guys who've been friends for the last few years. So it's what this is about. It was a lot of fun. So as always, you can find every episode of Whiskey Neat on iTunes, Google Play, Facebook. This week, we actually ran long. So the video portion is going to be about an hour, but we talked for about an hour and a half on the iTunes portion. So if you want to hear the full, unedited, and full of cuss word conversation, go to iTunes, Google Play, and don't forget to rate and review. That's one thing I always forget to remind everybody. So, yeah, without further ado, Ian Barry and Cruz Cruiser from Smokin' and Toastin'. Cheers.
So, but you poured a rum. This is a Barbados rum.
Yeah. So, Dominus is the newest release from Foursquare. Well, they kind of released a couple things simultaneously. The Primus, Dominus, in 2005. This is absolutely. To be 100% honest, I wasn't a fan of the Primus, but this Dominus I freaking love. I think it's absolutely fantastic rum.
Was it about the Primus you didn't like?
So I believe it's wine finished. Every time they do a wine finish, I'm just not feeling it. There's something about the port barrels. Or I know they did a Zinfandel cask a few years ago. Same thing. I just wasn't a fan of it. This just raw, no sugar added product is fantastic as is.
This is, I'm appreciating how oily this is just in the glass. And then when you take a sip, it's interesting because like the smallest sip just goes everywhere in your palate.
It's I think it's 59, 56%. Yep. And they do a mix of ex-bourbon and ex-cognac barrels. And of course, you know how I feel about cognac and Armagnac.
Yes. Well, it's really good. Now, I'm curious as to whether you have a preference for rum regions. Do you like Barbados? Do you like the Nicaraguan, which is going to be harder and harder to find? Do you like Jamaican? What region generally does it best for you when it comes to rum?
So, with rum, I'm very flexible. Good rum is good rum in my book. So even now, there are definitely some Jamaican funk that has some really really funky. They do a lot of open pit fermentation where they use wild yeast from the air. Mm-hmm. And the fermentation process is usually a lot longer. So it yields a very funky high ester rum. So I'm a fan of Jamaican funk. But Barbados is fantastic. This Nicaraguan is fantastic. I don't have a particular preference. It's basically like saying this is, Mexican food, sushi food, Japanese food, or you know what I mean? It's just different types.
Just different style, not necessarily one is better than the other.
So. Right.
This, I'm surprised it says it's 10 years cask age. I'm surprised there's as much heat because this has almost a raw kind of element to the flavor in a good way, but like that raw sugar kind of element to it that I'm surprised hasn't been aged out of it.
I've also noticed what's missing in this, and I don't mind it missing at all.
Pina colada mix?
Well, yeah. If you like pina coladas.
Oh, man.
But the what's missing in this, and again, I'm not missing it, but I noticed that it's not there. A lot of Barbados rum seems to be heavy with what I call the rum rubber aroma, which is just – it's not an unpleasant
like thing. Like
Caroni had that. The only way I can describe it is it's almost like rubber smells. It's almost like that. And you would think that that would make it undrinkable, but it actually is – it's not that bad.
Sure.
I like that it's not here because now I'm just tasting the sugar and the molasses flavors and the almost maltiness that you get out of this.
This has, I think, a less complex flavor than I was expecting. It's quite good, though. I don't know as much about rum as you.
Sure. So. Well, I mean, I'm not a rum expert at all.
I couldn't tell one from one, you know, region to another. But this is interesting. This has a lot more whiskey character to it than I would expect.
Well, I find that that's the rums that I feel like the two of you guys in particular seem to like the most are the ones that are more whiskey-like.
Sure.
You know, in terms of their characteristics and the way that they hit the palate and all of those. And that makes sense since both of you are big whiskey fans that would be the rum that would be the easiest, you know, for you to access.
Easiest to tell. Yeah, some rums, and it usually happens with cheaper rums, so it's not as big a deal in the higher-end rums, but you get that rum spice smell that just kind of overtakes and doesn't. To me,
well, whiskey's pricing itself out right now. So the big problem you have, and I don't think there's a big debate going on whether or not whiskey's on a bubble. And I think, you know, like the housing market or something else, I don't think we are. But let me define bubble, because I think that's where the biggest confusion is. A bubble in my book is something that's not sustainable. Meaning we're going to run out of whiskey. You know, they've been saying for years, it's going to be a shortage. Yeah.
Right.
I don't think that's the case. I think what we're going to end up having is whiskey, the way it's going to – let's just say we are running out. The way it's going to solve that is something that they're doing now is they're pricing themselves out of the category. Meaning, you know, I love Heaven Hill and, you know, I'm a big fan of Elijah Craig, but Old Fitzgerald released an 11-year-old bourbon for $120, bottled and bond this year, and the fall release – for the same price as 9 years. It's 2 years younger. So $120 for 9-year-old whiskey. Now, if you don't know a lot about whiskey, that's a lot of money for a very young whiskey. Now, it could be great because a lot of people argue that bourbon shines in the 8 to 12 year range. But if you just keep going up in price because you're capitalizing on the hype or the market, you're going to force people into other spirits like rum.
Or even how difficult it is to get because now you have your higher demand. So you can say, hey, I'm going to raise
the price. People are buying rums. Rums going through a resurgence. Armagnac, cognac. All these other spirits are now benefiting off the tail of the whiskey.
Even gin and tequila are surging. You know, so. Yeah.
Tequila. Well, I think the tequila and mezcal market has been growing for some time. But yes, those alternate barrel spirits. I mean, our first episode on the show was rum and cognac. I mean, it was Pierre Ferrand. I think you guys had Docs on. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Docs was on your show just a couple episodes back.
Yes.
It's something that – did you hear that on the mic? It's okay. Yes, I just think the whiskey boom is benefiting other spirits, which is great. But it's forcing people out. I've got an Armagnac here.
Of course you do.
And it's delicious.
It is delicious. It's 21 years old. As you can see, there's not much left. 21 years old. $80.
Right.
And it's cask strength.
For 21-year cask strength.
Yeah, it's almost 55%. It's 21 years old. It's $80. And you want to sell me a 9-year-old for $120.
So let me ask you this. How do you feel then about something like Whistlepig comes out? They make a fine product. It's delicious. It gets rave reviews. It gets hot. And the price goes whoop.
So first of all, I've been wanting to have a good, healthy discussion around not necessarily controversial topics, but I'm glad you asked this question. I have lots to say.
Whistlepig is delicious. Yeah, I mean, so it's a very, very good whiskey.
Do not get me wrong. I watched the episode. You know, and to be completely frank, for years, there's been – I've heard lots of things around Dave Pickerel, rumors in the industry about him. And I thought he was completely charming. I thought I'd never interacted with him.
He was a wonderful guest.
Yeah. He was easy. He just like – hey, how about this? And he would go. He was amazing.
Yeah.
It was one of those shows where, you know, you come in with a list of things like, okay, here's what we can go over. And about a minute and a half into talking to Dave, I just moved the list away because we're not going to need this.
Sure.
He's a whole show.
Yeah. You know? So I started – actually, a side note, I started doing a list when I first started because of you. And it worked.
Don't copy my way. Believe me, that's not a way to success.
No, there is a definite madness to his method.
So yes, I don't really consider him. I've said before, we're gonna go down a couple rabbit holes here. But years ago, Doug had mentioned us doing a show three years ago, right after the first Whiskey Social, and I told him I don't really consider myself a host. It's not really something I can talk. I love being a guest.
You're good at this.
Sure, I mean, I enjoy sitting down and having conversations with you guys, but it really wasn't my thing. And we were still trying to build a brand, so we passed on it at the time. But as we've developed the show and as it's come out, I've learned a lot from you and from you guys. And I still call Doug constantly to ask his advice on things. He's definitely become my Yoda. But the list idea was something like to give some overall topics in case you need to help drive the conversation. And what I ended up finding was that I'd get guests in here and we would just talk.
And you just talk whiskey. Yeah, exactly.
Whiskey. Well, it's not hard.
And the best shows really unfold that way.
Right.
It's when you get somebody in and the show kind of takes on a life of its own. You just go with
it. Well, even with our format, we do the same thing. He writes a list. He has all these different topics. Sometimes we don't get to them. It's just there, like you said, to drive the conversation.
When you start to hear the crickets, then you go, okay, what else do we have? But let me just say this, though, and it's very flattering to hear you say that you've learned something from Ian and myself. But just remember, Chris, this is very important. When it comes to ideas or techniques, if you steal from me, you've stolen twice.
Oh, because you got it from somebody else.
Because I got it from somebody else, yeah. So there's a – not not. There's
by the way,
very
I think I've heard that phrase before,
there's
too.
There's very few original ideas. Yes, exactly. Exactly. But, okay,
Dave. So Dave. Dave Pickerel, the master distiller, master blender, because – oh, they are distilling now, yeah. So it seems like a very great guy. I actually enjoyed hearing his conversation, and I know the local rep, Stephanie. Was she in the background?
She was there, yes.
Yeah. So I know Stephanie a little bit. We've met a couple times. And it's funny, Whistlepig, it's really funny, not funny, but it's really interesting to see how brands develop over a couple years' time within market.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning Whistlepig has always been good whiskey. I've always liked it. I've always thought it's just solid Alberta rye. And I know they source some from MGP as well out of Indiana and thought it was great. My issue with them has always been simply the price. At $70, it's very high for a 10-year-old rye. But that being said, it's gotten, in my opinion, it's gotten better over time. They've come out with new expressions. The Old World is really good. The 15-year.
Yeah, we brought that on the show.
I still respectfully have a hard time paying that high of a price. Like the Black Prince, did you taste it on the show?
I don't think we did. Mm-hmm. The Black Prince.
No. So the Black Prince won some award. It may have won Whiskey of the Year.
I think I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah, it hands down, absolutely phenomenal. It is it's phenomenal juice, but it's also $500.
Right.
So that's the only problem with it. Other than that, though, I think that they're – I like what they're doing, and I hope that they continue to blend in the farm stock, their own product, and kind of continue to develop that over time. I mean, the simple fact is that they're developing, they're evolving, and Sorry, go ahead.
I bought a bottle of the Old World Reserve a while back and brought it on the show, and as much as I like it, I really think it's excellent. But at $125, roughly, what I paid for it, if you'd have dropped $25 off there, I'd have been very happy.
Now, and I know that
if that makes any sense,
some people, when you criticize a price on a product, they will often take the stance of, well, you don't understand what all goes into it or how the, you know, how we have to source it. No, I have a pretty great understanding of how the sourcing works, how the blending works as far as, and then of course I know how pricing works going to, I get it. I totally get it. Because it was the same criticism I had with Peerless. I think Peerless makes, hands down, it's a 2-year-old rye, and they are doing really great things. I mean, just phenomenal. And Caleb, their head distiller, is 28 years old, couldn't be more of a poster child for, like, the golden boy, right? Like that yes. Good old, did you ever watch Smallville back in the day?
Yeah.
That Tom Welling boyish farm charm. Caleb Kilburn of Peerless is 100% Tom Welling in Smallville. I mean, he is a good old – he's just wholesome in every sense of the word. But their 2-year-old rye is $120. And so it's – they did put a lot of – they didn't cut any corners, and they did put a lot of innovation into the process, developing it. They didn't cut any corners. They did it right. I think they could easily shave a few bucks off the bottle because they've got a topper on it that's $8 cost, right? So $8 right. cost once you – the cost of the package when it goes to a distributor is a, you know, about 25-30% markup, but then to the retailer, 25-30% markup. So if your $8 top now is $10 to the – you know, $11 to the distributor and another – $3 on top of that for the retail store.
$15
so you're not paying $15 for the top, and I don't care about the top. You could put right. you could put a little cap like this on it. You could make cork out of recycled newspaper and stuff it in there, and I'd be just as happy, you know.
So the thing about it is, though, I mean, the American way has always been capitalism.
Sure.
And if I make a widget, let's take it out of the whiskey world for a minute.
Okay.
If I make a widget. And I'm selling that widget for $5, and I very quickly discover that people will be happy to pay $15 for the very same widget.
Sure.
Isn't it the normally accepted thing that's going to happen that I'm going to raise my widget price? Unless I've got a reason like, okay, I'm going to keep it low just to fend off other competitors as well. But assuming all things are equal, you're going to maximize your profitability, aren't you?
Yes, you're right. But that leads into – people that leads into ultimately the situation that we're in which people are now being priced out of whiskey and being forced into other tequilas, other rums, other, you know, so you're now, you can get really, really good rum, really good craft rum at $35.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
For now. Right. At my house, we always have Plantations pineapple rum.
And that's $18.
I don't think it's quite that cheap, but it's not expensive at all. And it's solid. It's consistent from bottle to bottle. You know, sure. You don't have any issues with, well, this one's not that good. You know, it's very solid, very consistent. And I can pour it for someone next to, and I have a number of more expensive rums, things we've had on the show and stuff. Mm-hmm. You can pour it next to, it stands up next to those reasonably well to rums that are $85 a bottle.
And the thing that, the big thing to note is, everyone's doing it, right? So whether it's Heaven Hill or whatever, Beam, they all have these more expensive expressions. But really, their moneymaker is in their cheap expressions. Their workhorses, of Beam course, White Label, yes. You know, so they're making it now for that's Whistle Pig, their base product is the $70 bottle. But right. But I think that it does more damage to some brands. Not damage. I think we get lost. I think we lose our weird thinking because a lot of these companies get bought up by bigger companies, right? Mm-hmm. And you're right. Capitalism takes over. We live in an environment of infinite growth, right? If you make Joe Rogan says this all the time. If you make $10 billion last year and this year you make $10 billion in profit.
You're considered a bad year.
You're considered a bad year.
Yeah.
It's a failure because there's no growth. You have to continue to grow.
Right.
But that is what creates these bubbles. That's what forces it because your focus is continual growth.
And sometimes you did your best work in the year where you maybe only made $9 million instead of 10, but you were fending off a competitor right. and you held on sure. to your slot in the marketplace and you did your actual best, you know, job, you know, marketing, making the product, whatever it is. I mean, you can't always control the forces in the marketplace. And I think that's, and listen, and I'm not knocking Whistlepig at all.
Oh, no, no.
But these guys saw a fast moving train and said, we got a good product. Let's jump right. on it. You know?
Sure. Sure. And they're not, like I said, they are putting their full force behind quality and innovation and evolving. And I'd love to sit down and I'd love to smoke a cigar with him. He seemed like a guy.
Yes.
That's one thing that we have not yet done, but we're working on, is the ability to go mobile and to do a B2B episode where we're smoking on that patio up there and just talking and drinking. Patio.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And well, you can order bacon.
I think talking about that bubble, it's interesting because Scotch is going through that, but their response to that is the no age statement.
Sure. Well,
and coming up with products that are more affordable instead of lessening the products they already have mm-hmm. that have been, you know, the staples of their industry.
Because what those guys are fighting, in my opinion, is not the other.
They're
Scotches.
Not fighting the $70 yeah, bottles.
They're not fighting the other scotches. Right, they're fighting the American yeah. distilleries that are making great bourbon or making just like the Yellow Rose Distillery single malt that we yeah. had on the 100 show. That was a very, very good whiskey. And I don't want to get the price wrong, but it's very affordable. I want to say yeah. it's
well, we don't have
30,
to deal $40. With import tax here. Right.
right.
So for instance, we had Diageo on the other day and we had Lagavulin 16. It's $100 here, right? Overseas, if you were in Scotland, you wanted Lagavulin 16-year-old, it's $50. So the difference...
Road trip.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, there's a few websites I know of. You can order them in bulk, order a case of six and pay $250 as opposed to, you know, paying the $600,
right,
you
right.
know? So
party at your house.
yeah, it's or $300, yeah. So it's complicated, it's layered, it's involved, but I think, you know, I think Whistlepig is making quality. I mean, I really cannot express how great I thought Black Prince was. I was very impressed. It's just those price points are going to push people. It's one thing if it's one or two whiskeys doing it, but now everyone's doing it. Everyone is doing it.
But there are the, you know, the Buffalo Traces, the Eagle Rares that are much more affordable that make – I'm going to say a pretty comparable product.
Their business model is, in fact, Buffalo Trace, to not raise their prices, but to increase production. And now I think – and I always forget if it's 1,000 barrels a week or 1,000 barrels a day. But right now, Buffalo Trace has put in a bunch of new stills. I mean, they're working on quality staying the same, price staying the same, quantity being increased.
So does it worry you consistency of quality as they increase? Is that a big concern?
No, they're kind of a conundrum because they used boxed dry yeast, whereas the whole love story behind, you know, even during the Heaven Hill Distillery fire and in the 90s, they did what they could to save the bucket of yeast, the sour mash yeast that they've been using in, for years. That was the whole thing is mm-hmm. A lot of distillers keep a live cultured yeast going so that they
yeah, can, they live for years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they can continue to batch consistency, mm-hmm. whereas Peerless takes the stance of everything is sweet mash, meaning they, after they do a run, they literally sanitize everything. They get rid of any bacteria. They don't want the evolving yeast. Their idea of consistency is starting fresh each time.
And having it go down the same process. Yeah, same process.
Which is fine. Mm-hmm. Every distillery has their own take on how their process works. And what you learn, at least as a consumer, is that there's not just one way to skin a cat, right? So that's that old adage. Mm-hmm. Actually, I came up with that saying myself, but
I've never actually heard that before today.
There's more than one way to skin a cat.
Right, I'm so stealing that for our show.
So it all works.
Let me just tell you, I'm very slowly enjoying the hell out of this Dominus. This is a wonderful rum.
I don't think we'll actually see it here locally. It's a few of their brands never make it to us.
Wow. So how can you get a hold of this?
Oh, I bought that on one of those websites overseas and they shipped it to me.
I was waiting for him to go, I know a guy.
Yeah. I know a guy.
Or these days it's just the dark web, you know. Everything's on the dark web.
I know the premises here. I don't think Dominus is here yet.
But the premise, you said you didn't like as much.
I just wasn't sold on the red wine influence.
Mm-hmm. That's just me. This is just terrific.
This has got, it's still, even after after all that I've drank of it there, it's still got a little more heat than I would expect even.
Yes.
But in a very pleasant way.
It's almost 120 proof, yeah. Right? So it's going to be up there.
You know, have you ever noticed whenever we hang out with Chris, we always get the super high proof stuff?
Right?
Well, that's Ian's like, bag, right?
Yeah. Let's just scald your tongue.
We did two barrel picks of this Armagnac, so we'll be seeing some of this very soon as well.
Now, you brought that to the 100th episode, right?
I did.
That was delicious.
Speaking of which,
I tried both of them. You had an 18 and a 21.
Yes. Let's talk about this 100th episode for a minute.
Let's talk about the first broken glass of the 100th episode.
So, well, that was one drink in. That was just me being clumsy. Yeah.
So Smoking and Toastin' has officially been around for now 101 episodes. But when we reached show number 100, we decided to do it sort of free-for-all style. We invited everyone who'd ever been a guest on
the
show.
Which I had been saying for 2 years now, you guys should do an episode that was just – helter skelter, free form, mm-hmm. No commercial breaks, just conversation. And I mean, didn't you have two cigars during that?
Three.
I had three. I had three cigars during the show. The show clocked in at almost 3.5 hours.
That's awesome.
And
and I don't think it ever got boring.
It could easily have gone another hour.
Yeah, we had to wrap it up.
Easily, yeah. I was worried it was going to rain on us because we were out running out to a balcony, and there was some cover, but not as much as we might have needed had it really stormed, right. You know? So I was hoping that we would be able to wrap it up before all that hit, and we did. But, just getting, for example, you and Jeremiah Butler, our friend from B&B Butchers and Restaurant, on the same panel at the same time, going back and forth, it was just – in the TV industry, they have phrases like comedy gold. I guess this was whiskey gold.
Sure, yeah. Sure. I there were many things I wanted to talk with them, but with everything going on so it was just kind of, I'm eager to sit down with him again and to discuss as much as possible. He seems like a really great guy, very knowledgeable. We were going to discuss what he wanted to discuss. Brandy?
He wanted to discuss brandy, and he wanted to discuss allocation and the state of the industry and how it's decided that, you know, this account gets this many bottles of that product and so on.
I don't know if Jeremiah he strikes me as someone who's too busy to actually watch this, but I'm gonna say this anyways. And I know many of you already know this, but the way allocations work in the state because of how Texas laws work is stores, and this might be – some of this might technically be illegal, but not for me, so I'm going to say it anyways. The way allocations work, typically speaking, and we've talked about this back when we had John Kieran on, is a store – it's all based on volume. And if a store –
the more you sell, the more you're allocated of a particular hard-to-get product or whatever.
Sure, but what they do is if they have the product in the store – or in the warehouse, whatever, and it's in the system available for order, they technically can't tell you, no, you can't have this if you try to order it in the system.
Right.
What you can do, however, is get it in, get it out as soon as it's in so that get it to stores that you kind of shrugged, saying, hey, if you bring in X amount of product, in the fall when these releases come in, I'll make sure your store gets – I'll make sure you're taken care of. Right. So you're talking about downline future promises. And then as soon as it's in, you get it out and hand delivered. A lot of these places, you know, if they put them on a truck, a lot of stuff will just fall off that truck.
Of course it does. Yeah.
So what they do is they'll give it to the sales reps and have them literally drive it in their car to that store to deliver it. So
what you're saying is it's we could technically refer to it as something that's a bit of a gray area.
Well, it's I would say loopholes.
Technically, it's very hazy. Is that what you're
technically
saying?
Technically, it's very undefined.
It's the any IPAs of – it's the New England IPA. It's the hazy IPAs
the
of
– hazy, juicy IPA of the distribution world.
It's completely opaque if you want to call that hazy. But essentially what happens is you get stores like NASA Liquor or these mom-and-pop stores who do a lot of volume. And they get their product in. Now, those stores also want to base their allocation out to their customers based off what? How much those customers spend. Well, who spends more? even if I was very wealthy, even if I spent $100,000 a year at a single mom and pop liquor store, if that store has its Class B license or its you know, the ability to sell to bars and restaurants, mm-hmm. that bar and restaurant's going to do more for that store,
yes. right?
So Rosewater in Clear Lake is one of just a few on-premise accounts that does a lot of business with NASA Liquor. They'll do a couple hundred grand, 300 grand a year for the average bar. And, of course, when that store gets that product in, they want to make sure that those restaurants are. So that's why in Houston you will see places like Reserve 101 has all the Pappies, all the B-Techs, literally everything mm-hmm. that makes it hard for us to get, because those stores, those bars and restaurants, excuse me, restaurants do more volume for a mom and pop
store. So they're
store.
First in line.
Yep. And the distributor has no say-so over which bars are – it's all done at each level. So the distributor can decide which stores it goes to. The stores can decide which bars and restaurants it goes to, all while old Jimmy Dean, regular person, is getting frustrated because he can't find whatever on the shelf.
Right.
But the inverse of that is the one allocated product that Houston – people tend to get a lot of, the average consumer is Weller 12, which, again, that pisses off the bars and restaurants because they can only get so much of it, because you get the average Joe in there who, as soon as he sees it on the shelf, he grabs everything he can, and then that bar and restaurant can't get anything in the store.
So you know? Why is that one reversed?
Well, it might be the easier one to deal with, right? So Pappy, mm-hmm. everyone would kill people over, right? There's a literal secondary market for Pappy that, mm-hmm. that has caused, you know,
the
counterfeits.
Black market.
You knew about the guy that stole the barrel of Pappy, yeah. you know, the Pappy yeah. heist, and these.
You got to be dedicated to Pappy to steal a whole barrel of it.
Those things are life ruiners. Where no one's going to ruin their job and career over Weller 12. So it's like in that nice little easy zone to
get. It's a dubious honor for Pappy, yeah, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, they're not the only ones either.
So tell me about this. Ian and I are both sampling this mic drop, which I believe I had some of this the last time I was on.
Yes. So yes. PM Spirits, as you can kind of recognize them from their glass top there. Mm-hmm. PM Spirits is Nicholas Palazzi. Absolutely. Amazing company. They basically import. This is their own product. Basically, they, from what I understand, they did a blend of 8-year-old, 10-year-old, what's it, 8-year-old cask strength, unfiltered, and it's a bunch of single barrels from MGP. Blended them. I think they did something like, you know, this is actually the same mash bill as Bell Mead, which we just did a barrel pick of. But they blended them together and released, I don't 1,000 bottles, 12. I don't know how many bottles it was, but it never made its way to Texas because it sold out. It's a bit of a silly label. It basically looks like Captain America with an eagle and a snake behind him. But it's pretty solid juice. Again, this is 8 years old for $100. Actually, wow. I think it was like 120. But again, you're getting younger and younger. Price is going up. Even for that crafty stuff, it makes it very hard to not want to explore other spirits at a lower price.
Mm, interesting. So do you see that filtering over? Do you think the same thing will begin to happen with rums? And I think it has already to some degree happened with tequila.
It's already happened with rums and tequila, whether they are going up a little bit, but I don't think we're going to see. There's a company called Habitation Villiers who does very what they're called, essentially a merchant bottler. They will go around to all the distilleries in the Caribbean, source really quality cask strength rums, bottle them, and it is pricey. It's you know, $120, but it is some of the best rum that you'll ever touch your lips. And I've been working with Kate Perry for a while now to try to get her to come to Texas, and it's now in the U.S. in New York, and I think it's in Louisiana. There's in a few places that it's so it's starting to bleed into the U.S. a little bit, but it will go, prices will go up, and things may normalize then. But as of now, because all the other spirits aren't as expensive, they're benefiting from the whiskey boom.
What's the sweet spot price wise for whiskey right now? Like, what's the best price versus quality?
So for bourbon, I think you can get You know, you can get really good bourbon, honestly, as low as $20 and as high as, you know, that $50 range, $60 range. I think that that range is would cover anyone's budget, right? So Russell's Reserve single barrel from Wild Turkey, $55, buy it all day, right? But even on the lower end, Ezra Brooks 107, I always forget if it's 101 or 107. They have a 7-year-old straight bourbon they sourced from Heaven Hill for $20, and I buy it all. In fact, I've got a couple cases at the house. It's just solid, easy drinking bourbon. But then you've got Eagle Rare for $25, mm-hmm. Old Willer Antique for $30, Henry McKenna $35. Henry McKenna's 10-year-old bottled and bond single barrel bourbon for $35. 10-year-old bottled and bond single barrel bourbon. But you know what's funny, going back to what I was talking about overpricing things, the new Old Fitzgerald is 9 years old, bottled and bond for $120. So Henry McKenna is made by the same company who makes Old Fitzgerald. There's a massive gap in price there for similar. Now, I do realize that, you know, just because it's the same age doesn't mean it tastes as good, or you know what I mean? I get that it's not necessarily better just because it's older or whatever. But you can hit that sweet spot at about every $5, really, in that $20 to $50 range. So, see, I hit OWA for $30, Henry McKenna for $35, Pikesville Rye for about $40. Mm-hmm. And of course, same thing, Four Roses bourbon for about $40. You can actually get it $35 at Specs. You can hit just, you know, that sweet spot is that $30 yeah. range, you know?
So let me ask you this. The flip side of that question would be, if money were no object, say you had all the money in the world, or the makers of every whiskey had dropped off a case at your house, you had more whiskey than you could ever drink. Money's no object. Give me three that would dominate your rotation.
I'm over the Pappy BTAC thing. Honestly, if money was no issue, the way to go is vintage spirits. There's a lot of really old things, like that old rum, that Navy rum that we've enjoyed.
That was fun.
Now, I don't want to say that because I don't want people to run out and buy up what's left of a dying era in whiskey.
Yeah, it's all gone. The rum is all gone. Yeah,
but not just the rum, but the old Fitzgerald bourbon from the 70s.
Yeah, I can't get
60s.
That anymore.
Yeah.
It's no longer available, but thank you for listening.
Nothing to see here.
If money was no option, that's where I'd hit, because there's a few bottles.
Vintage spirits.
Vintage spirits from the 50s will run, you know, back then, run $20-$30, now $4,000 for a bottle.
And how much of that is the story versus just the actual taste of what's in the glass?
You know, I couldn't give you a percentage. I'd say it's pretty. There's a lot of story involved, but it really was. It's a piece of history, right?
Yeah.
So you're tasting a different process back then from a distillery that's no longer around. You know, there's. I'm sure history plays a big part of it, but I'd much rather pay that than pay some of the stuff nowadays. Because a big thing that happens in the whiskey world is old growth wood, right? So nowadays, oak barrels are made from new growth, stuff that was meant to be farmed and cut down and used for barrel making. Whereas back then, the process for old growth, those were just trees that were just trees. They were just living there their life. And have you ever seen a photo of old growth versus new growth?
No.
It's absolutely fascinating. So the barrel influence is just so much more involved. Let's see here. And I know we're recording and I know we're on camera, but I don't care. I'm Googling this.
If only there was
some amazing guess.
Versus new growth. So, and I'll send you this photo, Jack, and you'll add it to the thing there. Here we go. So this is a picture of old growth oak versus new growth. You see there, that's an oak tree from 1918.
Yep.
See how the rings
are more
compact.
How close the rings are, yep. Mm-hmm.
A lot slower growth. This is new growth. This is what our barrels are made from nowadays. So it's a different, completely different interaction with the distillate, different spirit. So it's not just the history of the story. It was a different product.
It was a different time and a different product. Sure, sure. Well, it's always interesting to me whenever you get an opportunity to taste something like that, something that's, you know, and if money were no object sort of a thing. What's interesting to me is, and what I try to figure out is, okay, what I'm sampling here, it's, let's say, 10, 20 times the price of what I would probably normally buy, right?
Right.
Is it 10 or 20 Agreed. Times better?
Agreed.
I think that with price, there's always, as you go up in price, there's always a diminishing return.
Yeah, I think that's right.
It's just the truth of it, you
sure.
know.
But if you buy the most expensive Porsche, it's not 20 times better than their right. bottom of the line Porsche, but it's 20 times more expensive.
Well, and that's the funny thing about ratings when people get stuff reviewed is they're reviewed on a scale of 1 to 100.
Yeah.
So it's like your price to quality index thing, but I think that's better than the scale of 1 to 100 because that's appropriate to what that considers
it's,
of the quality.
It's product appropriate.
Correct,
yeah.
right. So 1 to 100, oh, this was a – like they do with wines. This was a 94 rated wine. Okay. Well,
but it was a $600 bottle of wine.
Sure, yeah, sure. Right. Versus a 94. I've even seen stuff that was sub $50 with 95 points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the average consumer is not going to – there's not like a tier system.
Right.
Right. So people don't say, oh, that's 94 on the B class system. Right. The lower
right.
quality below a certain price point. It's just giving you a rating with no information. Price to quality index, you discuss the price. It's clear in people's heads that what you're smoking is a Black and Wild,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
You know, so I like that.
And based on
better.
The fact that it was 89 cents,
yes.
it's pretty darn good.
And for those who don't know, explain what the price to quality index is.
So the price to quality index is something I always think about, and we talk about it on our podcast, Smoking and Toasting. It's basically a 1 to 10 scale, but it's price versus quality. So what we're looking at is if you pay $5 for something, and like we do this with cigars a lot of times, or you can do it with whiskey or whatever, but if you pay $5 for something, and at the end of your consumption of that $5 object, whatever it may be, let's take a cigar in this case, you smoke that cigar and you think, wow, that $5 was well spent, that was worth every penny, then you get a 5 on that price to quality.
Yeah, not a 10.
Not a
10, a
because it's not like that. 5 means you get exactly what you're paying for. Now, if you go below 5, then that $5 cigar that you just smoked probably wasn't as good as that $5 you spent. So then you might rate it at a 4 or even a 3 if it's not very mm-hmm. good. However, if you smoked that $5 cigar and you're like, man, if I paid $7 for this, I'd be very happy. Then you rate it above 5 on the scale, right. which would be, you know, 6 or 7. So 5 is the midline. You get exactly what you pay for.
And just to test the extreme, tell them about the Black and Mild situation.
So Chris was on our show one day, and the night before I'd actually gone to a friend's house, and I always go over his house. We play Cards Against Humanity or whatever, and I smoke a cigar. Well, when I showed up, sitting at my spot at the table was a Black and Mild, and he goes, I bought you a cigar, you know, as a joke, because that's kind of funny. And, you know, I'm like, I'll smoke it. So I sat there and smoked this Black and Mild, and I enjoyed it tremendously. Like, it's a machine-rolled cigar. It had a little plastic crappy tip on it and everything. But the fact that I sat there with friends, it's not a bad-tasting cigar. It's actually like half pipe tobacco, I think. It smells actually pretty nice. The whole experience of hanging out with friends and enjoying it was fantastic. So I rated it as a 9 because this is an 89-cent cigar.
Right.
And I enjoyed it that much.
If you had paid $3 for it.
If I paid $3, it would have been probably below the 5 point on the scale. But
on this week's show, you talked about a cigar that you smoked that was, what, about 15?
It was a $14 cigar.
It was a $14
Super
cigar.
Premium, yeah.
You loved it, though, and gave it, what, a 6?
I gave it a 6, yeah.
So
solid
at
6.
That price, you're talking about a cigar.
That's outstanding.
What he's basically saying is, yeah, it was $14, but I would have been happy if I paid 16 or 17 for
sure.
it.
Right.
Right.
What was
right.
it?
So even on the price versus quality, it was a give me a second. Whoa.
You'll have to go back to show
Before
101.
No, it was a Davidoff Nicaraguan yes. box press.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it
An
was
expensive
outstanding.
Cigar.
Yeah.
But good.
And it was a little Toro. It was 5x48, I think. And it was outstanding.
By the way, can I Can I just hijack your show for a moment? I want your listeners to get involved in this. We are
all five
spearheading.
Of them?
Yes, very important. We are spearheading, and I know that you smoke some of these, so I want to lay this on you. We are spearheading a smoking and toasting boycott of Nat Sherman cigars. We will never smoke a Nat
Why?
Sherman again.
What happened?
Because Nat Sherman's parent company is the huge tobacco conglomerate that owns Marlboro. And they are lobbying for handmade premium cigars to be included in this new cigar legislation, which is so onerous.
Why?
Because their primary product is cigarettes.
It's Marlboro.
Nat Sherman, they don't really care that much about it. It's a tiny, tiny part of
so
their portfolio.
So they don't care if Nat Sherman gets killed.
Right. Because
if it benefits the Marlboro.
If it makes it tougher for the premium cigar industry as a whole to maybe, you know, be something that competes with their cigarettes, they're happy with that. And my thing is that you can't have it both ways. Like you can't it's just like my frustration with Budweiser. You can't court me with your quote unquote craft beers, but then air commercials making fun of people who like craft beer.
Yeah.
You know? You want one or the other. You know, and so anyway, that's the way it is with Nat Sherman. So that's why we're saying don't support that company. They are an enemy of the state, as far as we're concerned.
Right.
And so sorry.
And it's unfortunate because I have a nice Nat Sherman in my humidor right now, and I'm going to have to burn it.
The last Nat Sherman that I smoked, I really enjoyed, and you gave it to me.
Yeah,
it was wonderful.
So I got it from a friend of mine, Brandon Luna, who unfortunately. Works for Nat Sherman.
Yeah, see?
So I didn't know this. Brandon, I'd love to, next time you're in town. I remember seeing vaguely on Facebook him saying something like, yeah, guys, I know it's been a rough day for Nat Sherman. I don't know what's going to happen recently. So
So
I guess if that had all come out recently.
I have a feeling it may have been because of this.
And I
could totally see cigar stores drop them from their inventory.
Well, and to be honest with you, Nat Sherman – it's an old company, and for a while their product had fallen off.
Right, it was very sort of mediocre. Recently,
I've loved their timeless. Recently they've gotten a lot better, and
they just kind of entered the premium cigar versus the standby.
But I guess someone sat down with their board and was like, "Hey, we should be lobbying against this because it's going to benefit cigarettes." And here's the thing that I don't think they realize. It's not going to help cigarette sales.
No,
will never smoke cigarettes.
No.
They're not my thing. Right. I enjoy a cigar from time to time.
Again. I quit smoking cigarettes in 2004. Haven't tried it since.
Yeah. So the entire board at Marlboro listens to the show. Listen to what I'm saying. No one's going to switch
to
cigarettes.
It's not working.
Yeah.
It's not working. No, but thanks for letting me hijack the show.
Sure.
That was an important issue. And we feel like
– I still love you, Brandon.
Brandon, come on the show. We'll smoke some other cigars and have a good time. I just think you can't. We as consumers, we hold the ultimate power, which is we should the dollars.
Sure,
and we should do that in an educated way.
Yeah.
If you think, for example, that and I'm not saying
fight consumer apathy.
Well, yeah. If you think that Whistlepig is taking advantage of people. I'm not saying they are. But if you thought that.
And neither am I. I'm not saying they are.
Then you should use your dollar to support other people. And I'm not suggesting, you know, that you don't buy Whistlepig. I think it's good and I think it's worth it even if it's a little bit pricey.
I think for many people it's – and I know for a fact for many people it's the introduction to Good Rye. I know a lot of people who have no experience in the rye world – and their first dabble in it was Whistlepig, and that's what hooks them. So a buddy of mine, personally, Taylor Wise, who, you know, I grew up with this guy, and he fell in love with Whistlepig first, before he even got into bourbon. And he was at a social, and we hang out all the time, and he's even bought a few bottles off me. He's amassed this massive collection that all started with Whistlepig. And I'm not opposed to Whistlepig whatsoever. It's just the idea of price to
quality.
Yeah. And not that there's anything wrong with the quality. It's just I have a hard time justifying $75.
So at that price, what would you spend that on? Let's say. So at the, you know, $75, $80 bottle, what would be a – what would be a good example of something where you think price to quality matches up better?
You know, my initial thought was going to say barrel strength Michter's. They did a rye that was really good, about $75, but that was non-age dated. And
I have some of that.
It's great. It's good stuff. And it wasn't. It's non-age stated. So in that case, it works to Whistlepig's defense, because my initial instinct was to say barrel strength Michter's rye, which was, I think, 58% alcohol. So it's very comparable to Whistlepig, which I think is 55.
Mm-hmm.
It's that 110, 115 point proof range. So that may bust my theory, but at $75, there's not many out there. Maybe if Four Roses cash strength bourbon, their cash strength barrel picks are about $65.
By the way, I think I had the cask strength at the Whiskey Social.
There's quite a bit.
Oh, that was delicious, my friend.
Whitmire's local distillery. I know a lot of people on the show know about Whitmire's. I'm going to get Travis in here soon. I want to get Travis and Gene on the same episode. That's a Lincoln Road OWA pick, which is absolutely fantastic.
This?
Yeah, that's really good. Which, by the way, I think the guy that muled that for me, I think I still owe him money for that.
All right, for me to open?
Yeah.
Oh, it is open.
Yeah.
For a second, it looked like it was still sealed. So
Whitmire's, it's the first barrel pick they ever did, the first straight bourbon. It is the first straight bourbon released to stores. So they've done straight bourbons before at the distillery, but you had to go there to get it.
You actually were on our show the day you were going to do that, because you had to jet out the door and then drive all the way to the north side of town.
Possibly.
On that episode.
My days in town are usually stacked. So, but that's.
I like your new strategy, though. You park yourself and have people come to you.
That has been a genius thing that's worked out. Yeah. Well, Stogie's off Westheimer, which, if you guys have not been down there, one of the more, at least in the cigar industry, one of the most famous cigar places in Texas. Stogie's is very well loved. Jorge has influence that not many stores have, the influence he's had. He's got several. You know, we do barrel picks, so we'll go out and find a barrel, we'll pick it, we'll bottle it. He does his own cigars, right? Mm-hmm. He'll do his own cigar special line with Tatuaje or he's done a bunch of them. I want to say 10 or 12 of them.
Yes, and they're all, interestingly enough, they're all the really Lanceros. Thin sizes.
Yeah. Lanceros, yeah. Lanceros, and I'm not a Lancero guy, but I've enjoyed every one I've had from him.
And the Fratello at your Fratello. Whiskey
yes.
Social.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good, yes. Enjoyed that.
And yeah, and everything he gave away at the social was his pick, mm-hmm. his Fratello blend. So his influence is unprecedented. In fact, there are some, you know, the tobacco world, and I'm going to talk shit for a minute. The tobacco world is very emotional, very, very feelings get hurt a lot. Mm-hmm. They don't want certain ones to carry other ones. If you're within, a lot of times what will happen is a cigar shop will have an agreement in place with a cigar company not to sell within 3 miles of their store. You know, very like territorial mm-hmm. and mafioso.
Mm-hmm. mafioso.
But the one guy that always gets exempted from that is Jorge. Everyone loves Jorge. He couldn't be a nicer guy. And we have an arrangement with him. And what I'll do is, after I do the shows here on Wednesdays or Fridays now, I'll line up all my meetings in the lounge and we'll sit down and have a few drinks. And it's just hard living all the way up in Clear Lake, driving into town 4 days a week and trying to work a regular day job.
I will say that back in the 90s, I was a customer of Stogie's before Jorge was involved, before he was the owner.
Yeah.
And what he's done with the place is pretty impressive.
Sure. He's got his business partner, which I forget the guy's name. I've met him a couple times, but I don't see, you know, the face has been Jorge for a while now. Or Jenny.
How long has he been in there, do you know?
A long time.
Because I used to go in there when it was a much smaller shop, and they had a tiny little humidor in the very back.
Sure.
And
there was a very interesting but nervous guy named Richard that ran it.
Yes.
Yes.
And so I used to go in there once in a while, because if I found myself on that side of town, and even I stayed with a buddy of mine in between houses for a while who lived over there. And that was right at the beginning of my cigar smoking, which would have been early 2000s, in that kind of area. And I always liked that shop. It's just such a friendly shop. And then when they expanded, it's beautiful now. That nice big humidor is so nice to walk in.
Well, it's just a weird thing. It's hard to have a business that's so delicate. You know, the cigar, we've been in the cigar boom for a few years, right? Mm-hmm. But there was a brief, it was a boom in the 90s.
Yes.
When Schwarzenegger mm-hmm. was the face
but
of cigars.
That, but that was an artificial boom. That was like, it became a fad. It wasn't even, you know, they call it the boom, but for a brief moment, smoking cigars became an actual fad.
Right.
And so people were smoking cigars that had no real interest in
sure.
smoking cigars.
Schwarzenegger, Stallone.
They were just, yeah, they were just following the fad. But the interesting thing that happened, though, was once the fad died, and it died within a couple of years, a whole lot of people had been introduced to cigars yeah. that went, hey, I don't care about the fad part of it. This is something
enjoyable.
I enjoy.
Yeah.
And so the cigar business, even though it cooled off to a much healthier place than it had been. The bad news was that the fad used up all the good tobacco for a while. So the cigars that came out in the couple of years that followed the fad were really overall subpar. It became really difficult to find quality cigars. That problem has since been rectified as sure. new crops have come in and things have aged and what have you. But you're absolutely right. The last 3 years, we've gone through a bit of a boomlet
yeah.
in the cigar world.
It's been good for all, mm-hmm. but it's still a very costly business to run. So a lot of them panic when a new cigar, you know, in our part of town in Clear Lake, Lake City area, you know, you got Smoke Ring that's been there 20 years. The Man Cave opened, closed, reopened. And then I think, what's the name of that? Sirius has got a shop down there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a new one opening up, which I don't know is being widely talked about. But there is this – it is very widely territorial, meaning
yes.
if you have too many in one area, it's like Starbucks. You have too many in one area, it'll be shuttered within a few years. Even if business is good, it's hard to maintain.
Although, in fairness, Houston, Texas is the one place in the world where we have a Starbucks –
Across
the street from a Starbucks, and they both do well.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. One of the trends, you're talking about the cigar shops opening up, though, one of the trends I'm seeing with new cigar shops versus the old cigar shops, new cigar shops are much friendlier to just walking in and hanging out and having a cigar without having an exclusive contract and a private lounge and everything
sure,
else.
Right.
So they're set up more that way. Now, most of them will have an area like that, and then they'll also have the exclusivity of the
right.
Sure.
The
which
lounge.
Is what Stogie's does. Stogie's
right, right.
has this beautiful patio with awesome furniture.
And they have a nice indoor smoking
and
area
nice,
for people who are not members
right.
of the
sure.
Which
of the club.
But they follow a new model, and they remodeled what – 10 years ago, something like that?
I don't know, but their VIP lounge is just incredible.
It's
yeah.
massive.
Just those
yeah.
bricks and
it's massive.
Just the feel
yeah.
of the entire atmosphere is
But
awesome.
At the same time, when you walk in and you're not VIP, you still have a really nice, comfortable place where you can sit down. You don't feel like
sure.
you don't feel like you're like, oh, there's a chair and a table over there.
Yeah, you don't
you
feel
know?
Like a second-class citizen.
Right. So I think that's a good trend in it because I think that also brings a lot of people in that don't feel intimidated.
Right.
By it,
well,
you know.
Want this is somewhere where people come. The whole idea of this in a lounge is to sit down.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically like having someone come into your home, your living room.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't feel comfortable, where they can be left alone or just enjoy themselves in a nice, comfortable setting, then they're not going to stick around there.
When
I think with the Breyer shop, which I love, but they didn't have furniture for the longest
right,
time.
Right,
you couldn't sit down anywhere. I'm like,
right.
this is horrible.
Yeah, and when I first started smoking cigars, I'd go into Breyer Shop was one of those, and I like those guys a lot. I also smoke pipes, so it's nice to window shop. And
oh,
if I stop
great.
And smoke a cigar there, I almost always end up trying to buy a pipe. But damn it! But like you know, some shops like that were set up to where it was intimidating. You know, like am I allowed to sit here? Can
right.
I go in
is
that room?
Okay?
I see everyone
right.
walking
okay
in
if
out?
I smoke in the humidor.
Like, no one explains
yeah, right.
that stuff
right.
to you.
Right.
And so there were a lot of shops where, you know, that's kind of how I felt. Like, if you were going to smoke here, oh, there's a table over there. You know, you get that feel, but there's a lounge back there that I don't know anything about. So I like the whole new model.
More hospitable.
Yeah.
I don't mean to change the subject,
sure.
but this is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm
that's
going
good.
There next.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this is
the Weller Antique 107?
Yeah, from Lincoln Road. That's their recent
wow.
single barrel pick.
Wow.
Old guest of the show, Jay Evans Tabor, he picked that up while he was in, I believe it's Mississippi, Hattiesburg.
Mm-hmm.
They're up there. I've never actually been, but it's very famous.
I may have
liquor
to go
store.
Now.
It's a famous liquor store in the bourbon world because they do picks like no one's business.
How does a liquor store in Hattiesburg, Mississippi become something of legend like that?
Well, you have to have right time and place, and then you have to be around long enough for it to develop its own audience, right? So they've been doing it. Right now, they've got something like 100 different barrel picks in their store. This is Weller Antique, made by Buffalo Trace, $30 bottle, single barrel, 107 proof. I mean, everything about that is exceptional.
How much is this bottle?
$30.
You have got to be kidding
That's
me.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And it's just, it's incredible.
Wow. So price to quality just took a huge jump.
Yeah.
Huge jump.
So it's allocated out the wazoo. And in Houston, we see maybe two or three of them for the whole city. And only one goes to a liquor store. The rest go to a bar and restaurant. Whoa. So Reserve 101 did one. Liquor Hut in Baytown, when they did theirs, it was so highly allocated.
In Baytown,
yeah. So again, he's out
Hattiesburg, in Baytown. I'm noticing a trend.
Right. He's out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And he's been there long enough and sustained long enough to develop his own audience. And it's become this place of legends, but it's an hour and a half drive both ways. So Kunal at Liquor Hut, great store, great guy, one of the most nicest, humble guys you've ever met. He did a barrel pick of Old Weller Antique last year, and it sold out in less than 24 hours. But that was because he didn't advertise it. It just showed up, right? And so when people started seeing it, of course, it made its way online, the Houston Bourbon Society. And we had several guys, not kidding you, one guy drove from Conroe to get all the way down here. And by the time he got from Conroe to Baytown, it had been sold out.
Mm. Heartbreak.
Yes.
The bourbon hunt's real, man.
So let me ask you this, Chris. Back to our discussion about price and the free market. Would you prefer, as a consumer, as a lover of whiskey, would you prefer that instead of making it a $30 bottle, if they said, look, demand is high, let's make it I'm making up a price. Let's make it an $80 bottle. Let's make it a $100 bottle. That way you might be more apt to be able to get it. Obviously, you'd have to pay more.
Yeah, so
how would you feel about
that? Sazerac's model has been to keep prices the same and increase production, as I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind seeing a $45 price if it became more prevalently available. But I don't think that they could even do that because, again, they're already putting out everything they make.
Right.
So raising the price would just yield no benefit. It would just be to raise the price.
It would just more isolate,
I think. So is there really then kind of a whiskey shortage?
Not a shortage. There's whiskey to go around. I mean, right now, I think MGP produces more than 200 different brands of whiskey. What I mean by that is they sell to 250 plus different companies and they just lower their minimum order. So right now, if you can afford to buy 250 barrels, they will sell you 250 barrels. It used to be 1,000 was their minimum order. So now they've got so much and they want to increase business so much that they're dropping the minimum order to 250 barrels.
Well, what that means too then is there's a lot more companies that are making good quality bourbon and whiskey.
Well, you hope.
Yeah, well, you hope.
You hope.
I guess there's always that room for error.
And right now, Houston's got two or three more distilleries opening in the next couple of years. So I don't think there's a shortage. There may be shortage of certain brands you want. Like it may be flying off the shelf a little faster.
Not a shortage of things to try, though. That's for sure.
Not a shortage of things to try, though, yeah. But they're trying to rectify that.
That's why the price versus quality and finding the sweet spot for whatever your budget is so important. Because, you know, if you go, okay, I can consistently spend $50, you know, say whatever it is a month or whatever in your budget, mm-hmm. and you find that these whiskeys are so good in that price range, you know, that makes it easy to go out and,
right,
you know, afford your whiskey.
Well, it's one of the reasons that I think shows like this are important, because as a consumer, I listen and watch these shows because I'm looking for, okay, I don't know as much about whiskey as either of you guys. I know a little, and I know that I don't want to go out and drop $50 or $75 or $80 on something that I'm going to be disappointed.
On a big question mark.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah,
sure.
So I use shows like this to be able to like hear what you're really passionate about and how you describe the flavors and what's happening in your on your palate and those things. And I go, okay, that sounds like – and by the way, if you can find this, don't hesitate. You know.
Well, like I said, that single barrel is not available here in Texas, but OWA, short for Old Weller Antique, mm-hmm. you know, as many of you know, is available.
And but it's similar.
But it typically flies – it's a batch blend as opposed right. to a single barrel. It flies off the shelf pretty fast. So, by the way, when's your birthday, Jack?
Saturday.
Okay, so you're 21 now.
Yeah.
Come have a drink on the show with us. Why? Are you not allowed to?
No, it's just I'm not
going to
drink.
Not yet? All right, well, I'm going to pressure you into it. I purposely wanted to wait until Jack turned 21. Our producer has been 20 for the past 8 months of this show, so I knew your birthday was in August. I'm going to peer pressure you into submission. But yeah, so it's something that is available here in Houston. We tend to get a lot of Weller, whereas we don't get a lot of other stuff. That's the weird thing about what they do. So Buffalo Trace has, you know, 15 different bourbons, and almost all of them are on allocation. Houston gets a lot of Weller 12, the highly allocated Weller 12,
mm-hmm.
but we don't see much of Blanton's, and we don't see any of their barrel. Well, we see one or two of their Blanton's barrel picks in Texas. I think Reserve 101 did one this year. And so did 8 Row Flint. But in Louisiana, they have barrels of Blanton's coming out of the Wazoo. So they're each state.
Road trip.
It's kind of like if you had 10 candy bars and 5 kids and you had to split them up evenly, you're not going to cut each candy bar evenly. You're going to just give 2 candy bars to them. So they may get the Twix, but they may not get the Babe Ruth. But everyone gets taken care of one way or the other.
Well, interestingly, and you know, Blanton's, you know, there's another high score or price to quality as far as I'm concerned.
I just have to have a buddy of mine. He's got a shop by his house. I'm like, hey, man, ask him if they have Blanton's because I can't find it anywhere around here. And I'm not the guy that's going to go stand in line when I think it's coming in either. So,
sure. How are you guys doing on time?
How am I doing on whiskey?
I have to go home and mow the lawn. Okay. I got all day.
So. We've got a couple more things I want to try and get to, but we're going to end the radio portion and the Facebook portion now. If you want to hear the rest of this, of three guys talking and drinking, the rest will be up on iTunes. We're going to keep going for a few minutes, but for now, cheers, guys. Thanks for coming
cheers.
On.
Cheers. Thank
I want
you
to go ahead
having.
And add Smokin' and Toastin' as their podcast. If you didn't already know, you definitely should. Smokin' and Toastin', that's Smokin' with the apostrophe and Toastin' with the apostrophe. They're on iTunes. They're on all your podcast platforms, and they go Facebook Live every episode on Thursdays. They have been longtime supporters of the show. I'm huge fans of theirs. And if you haven't seen the 100th episode yet,
oh my God,
go back to last week on their Facebook page.
Even if you only watch a little bit of it,
you can
totally
drop in any point.
Cue it up in the car and listen to it over the next 4 days on your commute to work. So it's absolutely just they basically invited all their past guests on the show. And we just drank and ate and talked. It was absolutely amazing. So thank you guys for both being here. We're going to keep talking.
You.
And one more cheers. All right, guys.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. When I stopped drinking sodas entirely, I got way less. As a matter of fact, I was drinking Mountain Dew a lot, too. Mountain Dew and Dr. Pepper were my things. When I stopped drinking
Mountain Dew. What is it, 1995?
Throwback. This was a lot of years ago.
He was skateboarding at the time. And,
his pog collection was growing back.
That's right.
So, but no, I quit drinking Mountain Dew. I don't even remember what made me stop doing that, but I had one in my refrigerator for like a week or two after I hadn't had a single soda or any kind of pop or whatever you want to call it. And I thought to myself, you know what? I'm going to drink that. I took 2 sips and had heartburn like that.
Oh, right.
I just don't drink it anymore. Now, I do love Dr. Pepper. And once in a very long while, if I get a crappy fast food meal or something, I'll get a small one. I never get a big one. Cause
Baja Blast is always my weakness.
I get a
if
small
I were to cave
one.
In Baja at Blast. Taco Bell, it would be Baja Blast. Yeah.
Okay, so I'll never pass it up. If you go to Torchy's Tacos, they have that, what's the soda company? that has, they have this, it's called Doppelganger, and it's like,
oh yeah,
it's like Dr. Pepper, Dr. but oh, vastly superior.
That's hilarious. Yeah,
like, so that I will always have some of that, and usually it's half of a cup with no ice.
Easy loss in the lawsuit of cease and desist. Yeah. Like, you named yourself Doppelganger yeah. because you admit that you are imitating yeah. our
yeah. And it's better than Dr. Pepper. It is. I hate to say that out loud because I do like some Dr. Pepper once in a while.
Well, Texans love their Dr. Pepper. Yeah. I mean, Texans.
But
yeah. almost no one else. Like, it's a really Texas thing.
But see, I have to like.
It started here.
And it's almost always just half a glass because more than that, I'll have heartburn and I don't want to deal with it, you know? Like. I'm probably already going to get it from the Jack in the Box tacos or whatever that I just got with it.
Well, you should just switch to this
yes,
because
I was gonna say.
This is fat free, gluten free, sugar free, and carb free. There are no
this
carbs.
This is a beautiful thing, by the way.
I was hoping it had extra gluten. That's usually what I like to order.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny. Gluten is a very volatile, very, very fickle aspect. So in distillation, so when you distill. It basically, that's what's left behind is the gluten. So even if you were to make a potato whiskey or something that was heavy in gluten to start with, like, well, you know, a big part of whiskey's wheat, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
It gets left behind during the distillation process. So gluten-free, sugar-free, carb-free, fat-free, you know, sodium-free. There's basically nothing but the emptiest of empty calories.
So what you're suggesting is instead of going by a fast food place, I should drink whiskey.
You should. It's now I know your body metabolizes it a little different. Some say it's yeah, well, I don't care. On the nutritional label, it's 000, okay?
That's not actually food advice, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
And now, you, go ahead.
I was going to say, tell me about when you guys go and choose a barrel and do an extremely limited release. Like
that's delicious, by the way.
Yeah. Myers here.
That's all dark chocolate.
What is that process like? You go out to the distillery, the barrels are there. Like, describe what happens during that process.
So a barrel pick, you know, I wrote an article on this and submitted it to a few media companies like Culture Map and a few others. I wrote an article about specifically single barrels because there's something happening in Texas that if anyone listening to this is an HBS – Houston Bourbon Society, you've heard me say it in the group, but we are actually, you know, the great thing about these podcasts is you get metrics, and we're listened to in 20 states. Not a lot, but there's like one person in someone's basement somewhere in 20 states. But for those who aren't familiar, historically, the old rare whiskeys that no one was drinking back then in the 70s and 80s, they were highly coveted. And then as we've upped production and the hobby has grown, the fanaticism is around Pappy Van Winkle, but I've already explained in this episode how allocations work. So it's impossible to find. For the consumer, the gold standard, the goal in your hobby career is that single barrel, that private blend, that handpicked honey barrel, that lucky to find good item that's better than what's on the shelf. That is a single barrel. That's better than what's on the shelf. Whitmire's is a single barrel that's better than one on the shelf. It's just something that's, you know, what they do is they batch barrels together for the regular shelf item. That's a hand-picked single barrel, right? And it only yields so many bottles, and then it's gone forever. So it's fleeting.
I'd like to point out, if anyone listening to this doesn't understand the difference between single barrel and non-single barrel, what a blender generally will do is take their barrels and blend them together until they get the flavor profile of what you expect in every
right.
batch.
What they want the flavor profile of that.
That's correct. Yeah. So that means basically for your standard, say Whitmire's, they have a flavor profile they're going for, and then they take their barrels and they have to obviously sample them and then use those in whatever percentages to create that one flavor profile. A single batch means you start with your distillate. And you go through the process, but you never blend it with any other barrel. Like that single batch, by the end of its, by the time it hits the bottle, has come out of one
particular barrel.
One barrel, you know, and that's what that's talking about. That's why
so
that's a special
thing.
You get
whatever you're going
yeah.
to get.
And there's
and
a, yeah, there's
like
a
this,
little bit of a
toss
up. Like, what's it going to be?
Yeah, so what he'll do is he'll line up a few barrels that he's had. You know, to be completely honest, let's deconstruct this. This will be fun. All right. So typically they have their warehousemen. They'll go through and they'll taste barrels through maturation. And when they think they're ready and they fit a certain profile, there's two ways of doing it. Either you want to set aside barrels for single barrel selection options that either fit your profile or are different than your profile. Mm-hmm. Buffalo Trace prefers that they fit the Buffalo Trace profile. They don't want anything crazy or funky.
They don't want something that's way off the chart.
In fact, there was a pick done locally where initially that private barrel had been chosen because it was off profile. And by the time it got through the QC process and about to get bottled, they voided the selection because it was too off profile, mm-hmm. which I think is a heinous crime. You want something unique, fun. You want to find that honey barrel, that really unique item. Mm-hmm. There's a guy locally that did a barrel pick of Knob Creek, and it's 13 years old, 14 years old. And it was so different than any Knob Creek I've ever tasted that you almost couldn't tell if you were upset or in love. Like it was like you tasted it and it was like, I don't know if I love this or I really hate it. Like it's
because it's not the Knob Creek you're looking for.
Right. But then you sit there and you drink it. And by the end of it, you're just like, this is amazing. Like,
but is that like that initial response? Cause you're expecting that Knob Creek profile, but it's kind of like grabbing a drink, expecting Dr. Pepper and getting Sprite. It's like, whoa, initially you have a knee jerk reaction.
It would be different. Dr. Pepper and Sprite is something completely different. It would be more like Dr. Pepper versus Pibb or something.
Gotcha.
Where except you know, let's just not say
Dr. B.
Yeah,
from Walmart.
A lot of people will approach barrel picks with open minds. It's something that I wrote the article about. The thing is, here's the problem: you're choosing from what's pre-selected for you. Right. Now, the real love and passion and real sign of like a potential gold mine is whenever they let you loose in their warehouse, which there are a few small distilleries who will take you anywhere. And you can literally say, oh, I want to try that one. Oh, I want to try that one. But the reality of barrel picks nowadays is they will line up X amount of barrels, 5-6 barrels, and then you choose from that 5 or 6. And if you don't like that 5 or 6, then you go home without a barrel. Mm. And some barrel selection groups, and there are groups that actually do this regularly, they're okay with rejecting a barrel. If we don't like all 6, then we go home empty-handed. We're okay with that because we'd rather not tarnish our brand by picking a shitty barrel. We're on iTunes now, so this is no video. You can say shit, piss, fuck, anything you want to. And Bobby Duncan's not here, so
about fucking time. So how did you get invited to? Not invited. How do you get to be a person who selects a barrel?
I'll include you all on a barrel pick. We do a lot of them.
Okay.
We've
that sounds awesome.
There's two options, and here's the reality of the situation. So TABC has cracked down. When a distillery wants to offer you a barrel pick, let's say that there's a smoke and a toast and barrel on the way, and you guys were given the choice to either come up to the distillery or they're going to mail you samples, and they'll just mail you 2 or 3 samples or 4 or 5 samples of whatever barrels they have lined up. You taste them on studio, on air, and say, ooh, we're picking this one, right? And then you tell them which barrel you want, and they send it to you. TABC has cracked down on allowing these sample bottles into the state, so a lot of distilleries will only let you come up to the distillery. So Four Roses, you have to go there to pick it.
Gotcha.
Same thing with, I think Sazerac has started letting samples back because I just did one for Buffalo Trace the other day. A lot of distilleries won't send you samples, but there are many that would, and we could definitely get some smoking and toasting samples down here. We've got a nice little network of stores. We'll let you taste through them, and then we let those stores carry them, and then you can promote it on air. And then
sounds like a plan.
Yeah. And then
it's just one of those things where we can basically drink all the profits.
Yeah. Well, okay. We don't. I don't make anything on the barrels, but I know that we, between the three of us, if we brought some samples in or even the brand rep, we can make sure that what you're picking was worth tasting and buying. Yeah,
that's awesome.
And then, we get them in.
Love it.
You know, Specs will even take it, put it at whatever store we want in town. And then you guys have your first barrel pick for the show. I think it'd be fun.
That sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
That, and then we also want to eventually have our own cigar.
Yeah.
Our own tobacco. We've
been working on one. We had a few guys come down from in town. and we went and did sushi on the patio at Masa and tasted our cigar samples from Nicaragua. And well, we had a couple from Nicaragua and a couple from Honduras. And they just were not up to snuff.
Yeah. I have to tell you, at the Whiskey Social, the way you guys did the cigar area.
Yeah.
Super classy.
Good or bad?
No, super classy. Because the previous one, you had an outdoor area, but it was kind of a almost an afterthought feel.
We talking about the well, there was two outdoor areas, which ended up being an issue because people only went to the front area.
Oh, see, there was an actual back area.
Yeah, there was a back area, right. but there was no windows and the doors weren't open, so no one saw it.
Right.
So it was it didn't get the love and attention it needed.
Gotcha. Well, this time it was clearly defined. This is where the cigars are, and the area felt great. Like, sure. That was super nice.
Well, I love the aesthetic. Yeah. That wall with the vines was just awesome.
Yeah.
We've got a couple more left, and then we can go. I want that Lincoln Road pick that you just did, the Old Weller Antique.
Are you holding me hostage till I drink your bourbon?
Yes, you are. Well, then I'm going to end on peat. You guys have ever had Talisker?
Mm-hmm.
10-year-old Talisker?
I have not, so this will be a first for me.
It is a campfire bomb in your mouth.
I haven't tried this one yet today.
That's the rye. I believe it's Mr. White. Is that what it says?
Yep.
Yeah. Ian, what was the very campfire-ish whiskey that we had? I chose it off the menu at B&B, remember?
It was called Campfire.
That
was the...
That's from High West.
High West, yeah.
That was good.
That's a blend of...
A very, very robust, tasty whiskey.
I believe that's a blend of rye, bourbon, and peated whiskey, like scotch.
That's essentially what it tasted like.
Yes. It was like a campfire in your mouth.
It pretty much.
Are you drinking the Knob Creek there?
Yeah, so that's Mr. White. We are in the middle of a six-barrel selection called... Well, it's after the movie Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, okay.
So we had six members. That's Mr. White.
That's the second place I went. The first
place I
went.
I always end up being Mr. Pink.
The first place I went was Walter White.
Yeah. Mr. Pink. No, Mr. Pink's not released yet. We just did Mr. Blue, which was an awesome... That barrel you see in the back of my truck in the parking lot, that's Mr. Blue. It's
the barrel that used to be in the back of your truck?
Oh, yeah. and then we did Mr. Blue, Mr. White, and Mr. Brown, which is an 11-year-old Elijah Craig pick that everyone went apeshit over.
Are you aging the barrel in the back of your truck?
No, I just picked it up yesterday. We do a lot of beer stuff.
Because I know they have, like Jefferson's has their Ocean selection. I didn't know if you had your...
Houston, your, Metropolitan... pollution being pulled into the distillate into the wood. Yeah, it's a good whiskey. It also tastes like rubber tires. Cuz it actually has essence of rubber tires. Did you taste the Jack Daniel's barrel we did with Ingenious at the event? Beer?
Yes, yeah. That was fantastic.
So that was our Jack Daniel's barrel pick that we did that they finished a stout in, and we're doing... So if you remember, did you see Reservoir Dogs?
Oh yeah.
There was Mr. Pink, Mr. Brown, Mr. Blue, Mr. Blonde. There was five or six colors. And then the guy that organized it all, Nice Guy Eddie. Nice Guy Eddie, we're doing a beer release where we're aging stout over at Southern Star in these three barrels that we used for our picks.
Are you using the Buried Hatchet?
No. It's Black Crack based stout. And it's aging in those three barrels, and then we're going to try to get it in a few bars and restaurants around town, and then we'll be doing a beer can release. I've got the label.
They're Buried Hatchet, which is where the Black Crack starts, I think, as well, right? Their Buried Hatchet is an amazing stout.
It really is.
I had to actually talk my wife out of, at my birthday party a couple years ago, I had to talk her out of buying a keg of Buried Hatchet because it is 10%. And letting me and a couple other friends that really love Buried Hatchet loose on a keg of 10% beer would have been a much shorter party.
I was at that birthday party, yes. It was relatively under control, but it would not have been with a keg of Buried Hatchet. That's a wonderful beer, though.
Yeah, I love it so much, I actually had to deny it for that event.
Well, you know, and I've historically been a Buried Hatchet fan. And I was a Black Crack fan. Last year's Black Crack release, I thought, was fun.
I have a couple cans of it at the house still.
thought it was flat. I didn't really enjoy it as much. So I'm hoping we can really liven it up with our freshly, because these are freshly dumped barrels, and we're not leaving it in for longer than 6 months.
Okay.
Those aged stouts get a real soy sauce flavor when they've been sitting in the barrel too long.
I have to encourage you to try a beer that we sampled on this week's show. It's the Lakewood Brewing Lion's Share, and they combine four different barley wines, wheat wines, and stouts.
They're basically four barrel aged.
For each year, they do a barrel aged release that takes about a year before they bottle it. And this year they combined four of them for the Lion's Share release this year.
I feel like
it was phenomenal.
Is it the one with the brewery that has the lion standing on its hindquarters?
I think yes, but it's a very looks like the Red Lion Inn that, sort
I'm,
of.
I'm
vibe.
Thinking of Firestone.
Oh, Firestone Walker.
No,
that's a wonderful brewery, but also, a completely different thing. Yeah, no, this is Lakewood. They're in. I started to say Magnolia. It's not Magnolia, but they're in the greater Houston area.
Now that we're not on Facebook Live, let's get controversial. What are your thoughts on Joel Osteen? I'm just kidding.
First of all, I think Joel Osteen needs to try the Whitmire's
I wonder if he,
extremely limited release.
I don't know if he's a teetotaler, but I would imagine he doesn't drink.
Yeah.
I would wonder what...
In public.
I would love to do a video series that was 10 minutes long, right? But it's 10 minutes condensed down for maybe a 40-minute conversation with someone who doesn't drink, and then offer them maybe a bunch of little sips of things, introduce them, like Jack, having Jack sit across from me. No, but like, you know, Donald Trump doesn't drink.
Right.
I would love to see what drunk Donald Trump had to tweet or say.
Oh, my God.
Not with the intention of necessarily getting these people drunk, but just you've seen the videos where they – have people try things for the first time. They've never tried it.
Oh, yeah.
Like kids will try.
The reactions videos.
Kids will try Japanese candy, right? Or that video where the ex-cops all tried marijuana for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And just those fun videos of getting people's first experiences with stuff.
I can tell you from being on radio for a big chunk of my career, you inevitably, if you do a morning show, wind up doing that show where the highway patrol or the local police department comes in. And they have you drink for the entire show, with the idea being to show people why you shouldn't drink for a couple hours and then, and then drive. The idea
is you guys do a breathalyzer after a 2-hour show.
The idea is listen to how drunk these DJs get, and it's an interesting experiment that I've been able to be a part of. They call you cabs to get you home and the whole thing, but
it's for science, and you're doing a good cause.
It's for science, you're doing it for a good
for
cause.
For charity.
And I'm like, woohoo, 4 hours of drinking on the show, yay. And now we do drinking on the show every week, so.
That's the one great thing about this is we're not tied to the same FCC issues that terrestrial radio has. I mean,
yes.
I know any cussing I do, you guys kind of edit out, but for podcasts, we could literally do whatever we want,
right,
and it doesn't matter.
Well, one of the nice things about our format is because it's not going to be radio at all, is we're just not limited by it. I'd hate to see someone have to edit our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. This is going to be liable. You can't say this.
We don't swear that much, but
we don't swear much, but...
Yeah, it's not something that I do much anyways in general. It's more of casual... as it comes to mind, something will come out.
I do it a lot, in everyday stuff, but after years of being on the radio, there's something about being in front of the mic that
you kind of know to be.
You almost have to think.
It's almost like being in church.
About saying it, to say it.
You just know not to. Yeah, you just know not to say it.
You're just conditioned at this point.
Yeah. All right, everybody, pass around that fucking offering plate now.
This Knob Creek is pretty outstanding.
Well, I'm sure enjoying the... Whitmire's.
It's all chocolate.
But I do want to try this
Talisker.
This Talisker before we are done. So this, by the way, this is the first one I'm pouring. So
it's okay.
All right, who's drinking this at the end? This is our
alcohol sanitizes.
This is our whiskey.
That's for
this
Donald
is our
Trump.
Whiskey neat blend.
Let me just smell it. It smells good.
Does it really?
It's got some of that Armagnac influence in there.
Sorry, I'm just used to doing this on our show, so I'll do it.
Actually, it smells pretty okay.
It smells pretty damn good, actually. Let me get the Mr. White.
Mr. White.
115 proof.
Mr. Brownstone.
I've also, there's like
now
so many different conversations.
Taste the proof in that a little more, too.
So many more conversations I want to have with people. Oh, yeah. Campfire.
Wow. So this is the first thing we've tasted today that really had any peatiness to it whatsoever.
Correct. So we had Diageo on the show a couple – last episode, the Myra episode. I'm a huge fan of Talisker. One of the most beautiful islands in all of Scotland is the Isle of Skye. And Talisker, just aesthetically just gorgeous. That Scottish countryside, waterfalls, I mean the whole nine yards. Beautiful place. But we had her on, and we talked about Lagavulin and Talisker and Oban. Just basically all the peated stuff that we've never done a peated episode before. I'm a huge peat guy. I love the campfire taste. I love the
like
burnt tire on a campfire.
Burnt tire on a campfire.
A tire fire, so to speak. You remember that episode of
yes.
Simpsons
yes.
where you see the giant town fire?
Yes. You know what we have to do is we have to get him a Kentucky Fire cured cigar.
Have you had?
I've had them.
Yeah.
Do you like that?
I've had them. I had. Put it this way, I've had I think two when they first came out. I've not revisited them since.
I've got
pungent.
Three or four.
Yes, they are.
That have been aging in my humidor since they first came out. So they're, what, a couple year and a half old?
See, but I think that those actually lose.
Yeah, it fades.
Their
well, it does.
Intensity.
But it also, well, mellow. I think
it
mellows the
out,
cigar
yeah.
to a point where it's.
The word I want to use.
You get a lot of that tannic. The tannic.
Is unctuous.
A lot of that goes away. And the. What's the word I'm looking for? In the back of the throat, to kind of constricting. Astringency. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. A lot of that goes away when they get older, and it becomes a much more. Well, it's an interesting cigar when it gets aged.
So I want to speak to this Talisker. To me, and this is very good, and I'm very late to the peated scene. I'm really just beginning to develop an appreciation for things that are more heavily peated. But it seems to me that this beverage and this beverage...
really shined?
Well, just that they're not the same thing.
Sure.
Like, there's almost more in common to me between this rum that we tried and this whiskey than there is between this whiskey and this whiskey.
And from since we don't have a visual
profile,
aspect, he's pointing to the OWA and the Talisker.
Yeah, and I
correct.
Mean,
they're
the
two
Dominus,
completely different.
The distinct. Dominus and the Weller are closer in taste profile than the Weller and the Talisker.
Yeah, they're completely opposite. This, see, the thing about bourbon is it has a very narrow range of flavors, whereas with Scotch, the sky's the limit. You know, what I mean is with bourbon, you're always going to get your brown sugar notes.
You mean like
your
the
maple
Isle
syrup.
Of Skye?
Yeah, that's exactly where it's from. But with Scotch, you go peated whiskey, sherried whiskey, you know, ex-bourbon cask. You can use basically any barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do a lot with the malting process. The peated process of making peated whiskey is so starkly different than anything you're going to see in the bourbon world. Your range of flavor possibilities with Scotch is so much more broad than it is with bourbon.
For those listening that don't know what peated means, basically you take this peat from the swampier areas there and you smoke it over the malt.
Yeah. So they dry it out. They cut the peat out of the peat bogs and they lay it out for 6 months to dry all the moisture out. Then they treat it like firewood, and they use that
to smoke the malt. And that's where actually Monkey Shoulder brought that to my attention, because the malt turners, you get up there with these big giant shovels and you turn the malt so that it gets a good even smoke and a good even dryness and everything else about it. But one of the conditions, if you do that all day, apparently you get monkey shoulder where the one arm is kind of hanging funny.
Which is why they named it there.
That's where it comes from.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Well, I will say this Talisker is absolutely wonderful.
Oh, it's so interesting. And it's cheap, $60 for 10-year-old
Very
scotch.
Very complex.
Peated. Awesome.
Well, we were talking about the sweet spot earlier for bourbon and stuff. I think with scotch, I think if you start at the $60 range and go to $140, almost anything you buy in that range is going to be pretty outstanding.
I can think of a lot of good in that range.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost easier to find good stuff in that range than you can find anything bad.
All right. So I've just given you a $200 gift certificate to your favorite
Specs.
Yeah. Sure. What do you buy?
Three bottles. As much as you can get.
Challenge. You're making
it. As much as you can get.
No, you don't have to buy three
okay,
bottles.
Okay, so
you can buy one.
What do you spend? And let's keep it to whiskey. What do you buy? What whiskey do you buy with your $200 gift card that I've given you for Christmas? Which, by the way, don't hold your breath.
Oh, you've given it away. You don't have to wait till Christmas.
Okay, no problem.
So, if I was buying a scotch and a cigar, so to speak, the cigar malt from Dalmore is outstanding. It's on the edge of being a little pricier than I'd want to pay for it.
$150.
So good. I thought it was $130, but.
Some places you can get it for that. It's old price.
But it's outstanding.
Balvenie 17 Double Wood is also really good.
Yeah, see that. I would have picked that. I will tell you this. La Santa from Glenmorangie stays on my shelf at all times.
$45.
I'm out. And it's not expensive.
So yeah, you can get a couple of bottles. Yeah.
Right. So so those are like absolute go-tos.
Signatory, who I'll have their local guy on the show soon, Matt Brown. Signatory does a ton of single cask offerings at cask strength, you know, Glenroth's 20-year-old for $100, and it's out of this world. And I'd buy two.
Anything fine oak from Macallan. Like they have a fine oak 15 that's I think in right at the $100 range. They have a fine oak 17, I think is tops 200. So I think that one might be out, but the Macallan Fine Oak 15 is amazing.
Yeah.
And complex and chocolatey and like all these other kind of crazy, beautiful things that it does. If I was going over to the bourbon aisle, I have to tell you, I would spend at least a part of it buying a bottle of Buffalo Trace or Eagle Rare.
If you can get it.
Nice.
Yeah, or Eagle Rare, because to me, those are almost interchangeable and that the quality for the price is amazing. And that's just, I always have at least one or the other on the shelf.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you guys for coming.
Thank you.
This has been fantastic.
Fun, both talking and tasting.
Yep. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, everybody.
The camera's not on, so they couldn't see us the last 30 minutes.
I was toasting you. Cheers.
He was toasting you, for those who can't see.